Christy Itzen, your hostess with the mostest, and this is the Laugh or Cry podcast. In this podcast, we'll talk about comedy, music, movies, TV, and all things pop culture. And this is episode number one. We're going to talk about the Golden Globes, Harvey Weinstein, and then we're going to talk about the new Adam Sandler movie, Uncut Gems. So stay tuned. First, we're going to start on this day in history. This is National Oatmeal Month. Hold back your enthusiasm, people. Your time has come. Now, in 1953, President Harry Truman announced the U.S. had developed a hydrogen bomb, the H-bomb. He made this announcement on his final State of the Union address. In 1950, Ernest Tubb made his debut on the Grand Ole Opry. And on this day in 1999, a trial for the impeachment of President Clinton started. This is like history repeating itself, is it not? Now, he was originally accused of lying under oath and obstructing justice. Later on, he was charged with witness tampering and abuse of power. Now, Clinton was also, at one time, sued for sexual harassment charges brought on by Paula Jones. He was also accused of having relations with Monica Lewinsky. We remember that cigar, don't we? He denied having an affair with Lewinsky at the time, but then later on admitted to explicit details of their relationship together. Now, during the course of the impeachment trial, the House Judiciary Committee had approved three articles of impeachment. Sounds familiar, right? However, after a series of hot debates, he was found not guilty. Now, he made a public apology to the American people, and all was well and good. In 2009, the U.S. deficit broke records and exceeded $1 trillion, more than doubling the previous year's figure of $455 billion. Wow, that sounds familiar, doesn't it? Sure does, because we're repeating it again. This is where we are right now. In 2010, full-bodied scanners hit the airports. Now, this was following the attempted bombing on Christmas Day of a U.S.-bound jet by a terrorist with explosives sewn into his underwear. His drawers were the bomb, literally. The screening at the time in airports used metal detectors, which wouldn't have picked up these explosives, but a full-body scan device could spot something that was strapped to his body. The issue with having these full-bodied scanners, though, is they produce a kind of a naked, near-naked image of the person being scanned, which raises concerns over child protection laws and invasion of privacy. Now, in 1967, the Newlywed Game premiered on TV, and today is Katie Couric and Nicolas Cage's birthdays, two national treasures. Going on, Golden Globes Awards. Now, here are movies that are nominated that I've never seen. TV shows that I don't know. The only ones I've seen, except for The Joker and Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. The rest of them, I don't know these actors. I don't know these movies. And I didn't watch the Golden Globes live because I was doing a stand-up show. Now, this is the first time that I've been on stage in about a year. And thank you, Monty Hicks, for having me headline his show at the Rebar at the Dam in Hermitage, which is right outside of Nashville. Thank you so much. Definitely check out his shows. But like with local comedy scenes, the Golden Globes had their fair share of drama, all right? Joaquin Phoenix received a standing ovation for his win as Best Actor for The Joker. A standing ovation from everybody except Beyoncé. What? Yeah, get this. Beyoncé and Jay-Z, they skipped the red carpet, they showed up nearly an hour late, and they brought their own champagne. Damn. I don't know if that's just being a boss or that's being super ghetto, but man, like showing up with your own booze, that sounds like something that I would do. All right. Now, it doesn't look like she was clapping. She did like a nice little golf clap, had the polite smile on her face. And, you know, I mean like small smile, no teeth, right? Now, some people said it might have been her dress. She might have been too uncomfortable to get up and down. And I will say it was tight. Not like, man, that's cool tight, but like, damn, that dress is so tight that a fart couldn't escape tight. Not to mention that it looked like her tits were going to pop out at any minute. The dress, it kind of looked like a tube top that it slipped down below her boobs, and then she stuck two unfortunate-looking puffy gold sleeves, I guess, on each side. I guess they were sleeves. I mean, some of these bitches were wearing some ugly-ass dresses. I'm sorry, but she looked like an angry butterfly. And some of these people should have shot their designers. I mean, I have not seen that many puffy sleeves since proms in the 80s. What is wrong with a simple black dress or a red dress? Helen Mirren, Jennifer Aniston, Naomi Watts, Christina Applegate, nice, lovely, simple black dresses. Nicole Kidman, Lauren Graham, Scarlett Johansson, nice, elegant red dresses. And then we have Taylor Swift. Oh my God. That dress looked like something her character from Cats coughed up. Ugh. And oh my God, poor Michelle Williams. It looked like she was either getting ready for a toga party or she was going to sing Hare Krishna. I mean, And I got to tell you, sometimes less is not always more. I love me some Kerry Washington. But it looked like her designer ran out of material and then ran out of thread. Gwyneth Paltrow, that was a brown nightmare. Now you know why you don't see a lot of brown gowns. It was a ruffled mess that still looked unfinished. Jennifer Lopez, oh, looked like a leftover Christmas present. I mean, how many big bows do you need? And then Belle Powley, I don't know who she is. I'm probably butchering her name. But she looked like she put that dress on backwards. Now, Dakota Fanning, oh, adorable. She's all grown up now. She was so cute. But she looked like Glinda the Good Witch. And there's nothing wrong with going outrageous crazy. But if you go outrageous crazy, do it the way Billy Porter did. I mean, his outfit had feathers. It had a train. It was ridiculous, but in a totally awesome, ridiculous way. It was like something you would have seen Liberace wear back in the day. Elton John, you know he was eyeing that thing all night long. And I loved all the women that wore suits. Sibley Scholes, again, I might be butchering her name. I have no idea who she is, but that suit was sweet. Who doesn't love shiny and sparkly? Let's be honest. Renee Zellweger won Best Actress in a Drama Film. She really needs to stop having work done. She looks like she's been stung by bees and can't afford an EpiPen. In a few more years, she's just going to be all lips and slits where her eyes should be. Nicole Kidman looked fantastic, but she really needs to eat a vegan burger or something. The slightest breeze looks like it would just blow her away. Keith Urban has to be afraid he's going to break her into two. And there's no way she cannot have a vitamin D deficiency as white as she is. Awkwafina looked amazing. Great dress. I was so happy to see a comedian winning an award. And I hear, I don't know if it's true or not, but I hear she might even be getting a sponsorship from Awkwafina, the water company. How great is that? Awkwafina presents Awkwafina. Ingenious marketing on her part. I think I'm going to change my name to Nike, but I'm going to spell it N-I-G-H-K-E-Y. Maybe I'll get a little something-something for that. Tom Hanks got the Cecil B. DeMille Award, and Ellen got the Carol Burnett Award. And I got to tell you, the expressions on Tom Hanks' faces, amazing during Ricky Gervais's opening monologues. Priceless. I couldn't tell if it looked like he was trying to laugh, or maybe his glasses prescription needed to be updated, or that someone farted at his table. It literally looked like someone crop dusted him. Now, I personally love Ricky Gervais's jokes. I do. Because where's the lies? There's nothing that he said that wasn't true. Everything he said was brutally true. Emphasis on the word brutal, all right? And I love that he did an Epstein didn't kill himself joke. Oh, when the audience groaned, oh, I know your friends, I don't care. I loved it. I love his balls to go after the pedophiles and his zero fucks given attitude toward joking with Joe Pesci and Martin Scorsese. I'm not confident someone at that table hasn't whacked somebody in real life. That is a lot of Italian blood flowing through those veins there. But no, they were laughing right along with it. I loved it. And what I love about Ricky, and another interviewer said this, he doesn't play for the people in the room. He plays for the audience at home. Some people are giving him flack, saying that he alluded to that actors shouldn't be using this as a political platform. And yeah, he did say something to that effect, but it was a joke. I didn't take any of that seriously. He even bashed himself, talking about Kevin Hart getting the boot over a tweet. Then he pointed to himself and said, hello. But people, oh my God, people have to get upset over everything today. Sadly, the people get upset over comedians who make fun of things and people. That's what they do. Come on, folks. Ricky Gervais, I'm telling you, he is my spirit animal. I love him. He comes up to the podium with a beer. We're all gonna die soon and there's no sequel. I love him. I love when he said that all the executives in the room, super powerful, but they're all terrified by Rowan Farrow. I didn't know who that was. I had to look him up. For those who don't know, Ronan Farrow, he's the son of Mia Farrow and Woody Allen. And he's known for back in 2017, he wrote some articles that were published in The New Yorker that helped uncover allegations of sexual abuse against film producer Harvey Weinstein. Excellent. And some of the crowd shots, people looked annoyed, but more importantly, they looked uncomfortable. If you condone sexual harassment, especially pedophilia, you're a piece of shit, and you should be made to feel uncomfortable. If you have a problem with people speaking the truth and exposing these horrible predators, then you are also a piece of shit. And speaking of perverts, Harvey Weinstein back in the news. Now, it looks like Weinstein is getting charged with rape in L.A. L.A. County is charging him with 4 counts of sexual assault. Good. Now, keep in mind that he is set for trial in New York as well. Prosecutors released a statement saying they're charging him with forcible rape, forcible oral copulation, sexual penetration by use of force, and sexual battery by restraint. That is some pretty heavy shit, people. And that's just 2 cases. It looks like there's about 3 more cases under review for possible charges. I say, if people like him and Bill Cosby, and all the like, if they're found guilty of multiple times of this kind of stuff, in addition to jail, they need to be castrated first. And I'm going to talk about chemical castration. I mean rusty knife, no anesthetic, pouring rubbing alcohol in the wound after kind of castration. Make that pain be the kind of pain they'll remember forever and relive again and again. Now, in New York, Weinstein is charged with first-degree rape, 2 counts of predatory sexual assault, 1 count of first-degree sexual assault, and 1 count of third-degree rape. Yeah, that fucker needs to get the high hard one when he gets into prison. I mean, of course, innocent until proven guilty. I think we know he is guilty as hell. And speaking of creepy old perverts in New York, Donald Trump has asked a New York judge to dismiss a lawsuit against him filed by a woman who claims he raped her in a department store dressing room about 2 decades ago. Now, about 12 women have accused him of sexual misconduct. Oh, 12! Ranging from anything from unwanted kissing to rape. But Trump denies every allegation. Now, do we see a pattern here? Bill Cosby, R. Kelly, Priest, Epstein, Weinstein, and now Trump all claim to be innocent. Oh yeah, I'm sure they are. I'm sure they totally are. Pfft. Now, Trump, he can't stay out of trouble. I don't care whether you're a Democrat or Republican or whatever. He blows my mind. Whether you agree or disagree with his killing of that Iranian dude, he still manages to make every situation worse. There's a bounty on his head. Now, when in history has a sitting president had a bounty on their head from a foreign entity? I mean, maybe it has. I just don't recall it. There's a debate on whether this is real or not, but I looked on Snopes, and it says a eulogist heard on Iranian state TV during a funeral procession for this guy calling for a $80 million bounty on Trump's head. $80 million. I even read that Iran might target some of Trump's properties. Now, it might be wrong, but I find this totally hilarious. I mean, I don't know if it's true or not, but I mean, it most likely is. But isn't this something like you would think a plot in a James Bond or Jason Bourne movie would be or something? I mean, this is totally turning into like some crazy spy movie. Now, if they were to bomb his properties, wouldn't it be funny if the insurance companies dropped him? I mean, that would truly, truly make me giggle inside. Of course, he'd probably find some way of sticking the American people with a bill. He'd probably get FEMA aid. God, he's such a douche. So, we're talking about movies, and I want to do a sort of review of Uncut Gems by Adam Sandler. Now, I love when comedians have taken on more serious roles, like Tom Hanks and Robin Williams, Jim Carrey. And I thought, well, okay, maybe we'll give him a try. We'll see how this goes. I went to see this with my daughter, and everyone's like, oh, man, this should get an Oscar. Should get an Oscar. I didn't hate the movie. I thought it was all right. I think it wanted to be Goodfellas, but no. I mean, maybe it's just I couldn't relate to the content. And there's a lot of Jewish stuff in it, and I'm not Jewish. A lot of basketball. I don't like basketball. A lot of hip-hop. I don't like hip-hop. A lot of gambling. I'm not a gambler. So maybe I just didn't understand everything that was going on. But it was so long. Oh my God. For me to sit comfortably for that long, there better be an Avenger or two in it. I'm just saying, I know we were just talking about Marvel earlier, but there definitely needs to be, we talked about Scorsese earlier, there definitely needs to be an Avenger or two in it. It was okay. It was stressful, but I think the biggest part of the stress was just them over-talking each other. Like, I wanted, if I was on set, I would have had to got a water gun and squirted them in the face. Like, stop talking. Stop talking. Give one person a talking stick. You can't talk unless you've got the talking stick. That was the stressful part to me. Not all the action, but just, oh my God. These fuckers just wouldn't shut the fuck up. Anyway. Now, when year ends and a new year begins, I like to reflect over my past year. Now, I like to think about what I've done, and it kind of gives me motivation going into the new year. Some people are like, oh, it's bragging. It's not bragging, because to me, it's just me motivating myself. Because sometimes you'll be like, man, I really didn't accomplish anything this year. I didn't do anything. But if you look back, you're like, okay, I did do some stuff. All right, I need to feel better about myself and really get me pumped into the new year. So when I look back over this past year, sure, there were some downs. I lost my dog, Ziggy, passed away to cancer. So that was really hard. But there was a lot of positive, too. I wrote two books, The Heart of Happiness and The Heart of Happiness Workbook. Started two podcasts, this one and Hick Chick Podcast. I've got a tour called Hick Chick Tours. And I started that business almost 8 years ago. I'm trying to learn Italian. There's a Duolingo app. And I'm trying to learn it on that. I mean, it's hard being older, learning a new app, a new language, but I can say ciao. And I can read some Italian, so I think I'm making progress. And I'm trying to learn the ukulele. I've always wanted to play an instrument. And I know you giggle at ukulele. I figure, okay, I got short, stumpy little fingers. So maybe this is a more suited instrument to me. And there's two less strings than a guitar. And I'm actually picking it up. I'm playing some killer little songs on it. And it's so much easier to me than the guitar. So, yay, I'm learning an instrument. Which brings me to my next point. I call this segment My Happy Place. Now, I'm going to go over some people and just really take this to heart. There's an 80-year-old tribal woman from India who learned to paint at 70. And today her art sells in Milan and Paris. Martha Stewart. She worked on Wall Street, owned a Connecticut catering firm, but her real success didn't come until around the age of 41 when she published her first book, Entertaining, and then launched Martha Stewart Living. Joy Behar, she's a co-host for The View. She was a high school English teacher who didn't really get into show business until after the age of 40. Vera Wang, famous designer, but before that she was an accomplished figure skater, fashion editor, before deciding, right before her wedding in 1989, around the age of 40, she wanted to be a designer. So she commissioned her own wedding dress for $10,000 and then opened her first bridal bouquet the following year. The late, great Rodney Dangerfield, one of my favorite comedic actors, best known for his roles in the 80s movies like Caddyshack. But he was 46 before he got his first big break on the Ed Sullivan Show. Duncan Hines. At age 55, he wrote his first food and book hotel novel kind of thing. At age 73, he licensed the right to use his name to the company that developed the Duncan Hines cake mixes. Samuel L. Jackson, 46 years old, and in recovery from addiction to cocaine and heroin. But at 46... got his first starring role in Spike Lee's movie, Jungle Fever. Stan Lee, we were talking about Marvel movies a second ago. Ah, love him, comic book creator, but he didn't catch his first break till he was almost 40. Alan Rickman, we know him as Snape from the Harry Potter films, but it wasn't until he was 41 when he landed his first role in Die Hard with Bruce Willis. Laura Ingalls Wilder, you know her, Little House on the Prairie. But she didn't publish her first book until 1932 when she was 65. And then Harlan Sanders, famous for creating Kentucky Fried Chicken, but he was 62 when he franchised KFC. All that to say, it's never too late. Yeah, I'm late 40s trying to learn a language and play the ukulele. You're never too old. It's never too late. If there's something you want to do, I talk about it in my book, The Heart of Happiness. You know, to find joy in life means so much. It's never too late to start something, to learn something, to do something. That's what gives us excitement and joy in life. So for this year, I want you to go out and try something new. Start something new. You never know what kind of happiness you're going to find. Well, thank you so much for listening to today's show. If you like the show, please subscribe to the Laugh or Cry podcast and give it a great rating. If you didn't like it, you just keep your damn mouth shut, all right? Follow us on Facebook and Instagram, and check out the website at laughorcrypodcast.com. You can listen to Laugh or Cry on Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and everywhere awesome podcasts can be heard. I'm Christy Itzen, and you've just been listening to Laugh or Cry. Thank you so much, and come back again.